We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode number 65. Phil Hughes, number 65, Scott. Are you still pissed at Phil Hughes like most Yankee fans?
So I'm not really mad at Phil Hughes. He's a home run ball. He's a home run pitcher, and he just did not belong in Yankee Stadium.
It did not end well for him and the Yankees, much like it did not end well with Jabba. I did kind of feel bad for the way it ended, though. I think that a lot of Yankee fans really got on his case, and he didn't take it well. I know he blocked a bunch of our guys from the website and a bunch of Yankee fans in general on Twitter. But he kind of seems to be coming around a little bit, showing his personality. I know he got engaged, so maybe his fiance has mellowed him out a little bit.
You know, he's just a guy that everybody had such huge high hopes for because the Yankees built him up to be basically the next Roger Clemens. I mean, we all expected him to be the number one guy. This was when a Yankee organization was completely decimated, and we had zero, you know, prospects to really look forward to. And Phil Hughes was like the guy coming up that we could look forward to. And when he didn't pan out the way everybody thought he was, and then the whole Jabba mess, it was like that whole little era, that small four-year window of pitchers with the Killer Bees and Hughes and Jabba. They just never worked out with any of them. It was just a disaster.
It's crazy to think about how long ago Phil Hughes came up. 2007, I mean, you remember that no-hitter he had going in Texas, and then he had the pulled hamstring?
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that he actually had some success in the bullpen when he first came up. I think that when he had that eighth inning role for a little while, he actually excelled and did
pretty
well.
He helped him out in 2009 in the playoffs out of the bullpen. So
And you saw the velocity way up too when he was pitching out of the bullpen, which was really interesting.
Yeah,
he just couldn't maintain the throughout. It's just a terrible stadium for him to play in too. The way he is, his style.
He had that 18-win season, which I think was bloated a little bit. He had terrible second-half stats that year. I believe it was the year after they won the championship, if I remember correctly. But episode 65, we are a week away from spring training. So a little programming note.
A week away from the opening day, baby.
What did I say?
You said spring training.
Oh, boy. I'm all messed up. We are a week away from opening day. 1 week to go in spring training. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Little programming note, as I was saying, we're moving the episodes back to Mondays. So we've been doing Tuesdays in the off season. We did it, I think, originally because we wanted to talk a little bit more NFL and we would have a little bit more time to digest all that stuff. But we are going back to Mondays. So if you're subscribed in iTunes, you don't really have to do anything. You'll still get it. But if you find it on SoundCloud or the website or anything, just be advised that we will be releasing them on Monday. And a couple more programming notes before we get to some Yankees stuff. Scott, we released our fantasy kit. Justin McElrath really did a great job on that. And I think we've got a FanDuel promo that we want to talk about.
Yeah, so this year we decided that we wanted to add just some more content to Bronx Pinstripes. A lot of us are big fantasy baseball players. And, you know, I think one of the big things on Bronx Pinstripes is that you've probably seen some of the promos that, you know, we want to cover just some more stuff. I mean, stuff for Yankee fans, by Yankee fans. That's pretty much the big thing. And the fantasy baseball coverage is starting now. Justin has put together all the content for this awesome fantasy draft kit. So check it out. It's a free download. We put it together. It looks really cool. And along with that, we teamed up with FanDuel they actually gave us a free $500 free roll in a contest for opening day, which is awesome. It's for new and existing. You have to do, I think it's a $10 initial deposit, and then you get into the $500 game for free. So definitely check that out. The promo code for FanDuel is BP Baseball, and we're going to tweet out the link so you can get directly to that one. But I know there's going to be a bunch of us joining that, we're doing this fantasy. This is new for us, but Justin and I and a bunch of other guys actually been doing a lot of fantasy sports, fantasy baseball, and so we're gonna do the coverage all year, and Justin's gonna be the lead guy for that. So definitely give him a shout and check out the articles as they come in. So excited for that new addition to Bronx Pinstripes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's gonna be really fun. We'll put the link on, as you said, Twitter, Facebook, and also put it in the blog on the website so you can get it there, or just hit one of us up on Twitter if you can't find it. But I am not a season-long fantasy baseball player, but I think I might start dabbling in the daily fantasy baseball. This is a good way to get my feet wet, I think.
Well, definitely, because I think a lot of people don't have the patience for fantasy baseball all year long, because it's really a commitment. I mean, you gotta take a look at these things on a very regular basis. It's way more than football. But the daily stuff for baseball definitely makes it more tolerable and makes it more, I think, exciting, just because you're literally in a game for a day and you got to pick your roster for the day. So, yeah, but Justin's going to be covering a lot of that. And he's definitely going to be on the podcast more often, too, talking some fantasy baseball. We'll have a little segment for him as well. But, yeah, I'm excited about that. It's just another thing for us to talk about baseball-related.
And, again, that promo code was BPBaseball. So if you missed it, I think you and I talked about it last week about the video we did down at spring training, but that came out this week and it was posted again on Monday. So hopefully you guys saw that and enjoyed it. Scott, excellent job with the editing. I thought it came out really well. It was a great second installment of a Bronx Pinstripe video. The first one was from Old Timers Day last year.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. I was the camera guy in the first one at Old Timers Day, with the guys out there. So that was a lot of fun to do that. And then this one, obviously, Andrew and I kind of reversed jobs occasionally, where he was in front of the camera on the mic, and then I was running the camera and vice versa. I now know how to edit videos. I didn't know how to edit videos before this, so I did a lot of like staring at the screen and like hoping it would just come to me, and then I watched a bunch of YouTube videos, but I think it came out pretty good. It came out all right.
The quality on it is fantastic, and we just use my iPhone. It's an insane iPhone. How good it, the
yeah that is
are.
That's pretty unbelievable.
You would have thought we shot that with like a full HD camera or something.
Yeah, the new iPhones have phenomenal picture quality. I was extremely impressed with that, and the difference between my old 5, which I just stubborn and haven't upgraded yet, and your 6, what is it, the big one, the 6S, I don't know, whatever
it's
is.
It's the 6S, yeah. I don't have the Plus because that thing physically wouldn't fit in my pocket.
But it's, I mean, the picture quality is like ridiculously different. So there's a little plug for your iPhones.
we're not getting paid by them, though.
No.
All right, last bit of programming. The baseball movie March Madness bracket is over. We have finally crowned a champion. It was The Sandlot. The Sandlot wiped the floor with every matchup it had. I think the closest matchup it was against Field of Dreams in the final, and that was still like a 64% win for them. So The Sandlot just absolutely steamrolling the competition. No surprises that it made it to the finals, but the fact that it just totally blew out everybody, I know it's a good movie, but people love The Sandlot.
But don't you think there was also a generational thing, too? I mean, I think a lot Definitely. Of this had to do with the generation of who was voting.
Yes, we're talking 18 to 25-year-olds on Twitter, or people who are nostalgic like me, who was like growing up when we were 8 years old watching that.
Right. And, you know, The Sandlot is a great movie, and I absolutely love that movie. To me, I mean, obviously I know that you have to pick one of them, but they're very different baseball movies. Totally. And Field of Dreams is definitely one of my favorites. And The Sandlot is one of my favorites because of just the way I don't know. It gives you that, you say nostalgia as you grew up with it, but it makes you feel like your kid again, because that's what you used to do. I mean, we used to play wiffle ball every day in my backyard. And it was very similar to that. But Field of Dreams is like that feel good baseball movie. And the fact that people were not calling it a baseball movie is ridiculous. It is outrageous. But I mean, very appropriate that the two of them were in the finals. Very different movies, but both great movies.
I apologize for misspelling the word dreams. I feel like an umpire that blew a call or something.
This is
like
the
that.
Sandlot with an asterisk on their championship.
We might have to do it next year because Field of Dreams is gonna protest the vote. I misspelled it in the poll. People still know what the movie was, but it is a little bit of a tainted victory for The Sandlot.
Yeah, I kept thinking of like the Princess Bride where he was like, marriage and just completely Field of Dreams.
I was out Thursday night and I had to tweet it quickly from my phone. And it was a whole big mess on Thursday. So I apologize to all the people who possibly voted for The Sandlot because they didn't know what the movie Field of Dreams was. If you're one of those people, let me know, and I'll personally apologize. But if you couldn't make the connection between Deems and Dreams, then I question you.
There was someone who tweeted, I thought it was pretty funny, about like
Pevin Tosner or something.
Yeah, he changed up the words.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Good stuff. And congrats to The Sandlot. We'll have to do another bracket next year, another baseball-related bracket. I'll have to think of something. All right, so a lot of Yankee stuff over this past week, and things are really heating up as we get closer to opening day. The first was the fact that A-Rod announced his quote-unquote retirement, a two-year farewell tour for A-Rod potentially in the works, said to Andrew Marchand of ESPN that after his contract ends after the 2017 season, he's going to hang it up. But then the next day, the New York Daily News comes out with reports that A-Rod's not quite positive that he's going to retire after that time. And he sort of backtracked a little bit. And he was just sort of saying, I'm thinking in terms of my contract, and I'm going to evaluate if I want to keep playing after that. Which I didn't even think need to be said. I think that was pretty obvious. But it is kind of likely that A-Rod does retire at the end of 2017. And I just think it's hilarious A-Rod fashion to say this, not one, but 2 years before the actual time comes.
See, to me, it's a guy that's trying to get a headline also and making this more of what it was. I have a feeling it was in conversation and that the words were just taken a little bit differently than they were meant.
Marchand trying to get a headline.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. I mean, this is a huge, there's nothing going on, nothing of national interest. And then all of a sudden he says these things out of his mouth that could be maybe tweaked a little bit and you have a definitive retirement announcement. So, I mean, look, the guy's 40 plus years old. We know he's going to be done after his contract. No kidding. Unless someone gives him another contract and he decides to play another year for whatever money. I mean, it's pretty obvious. This is not like, this isn't breaking news, so yeah.
I
don't put that, this one on A-Rod though.
No, and you're right. That is a good way of looking at it. That they were just the Marchand was looking for headlines. But if A-Rod did truly say he's going to retire after 2017, that's just kind of going back to mid 2000s A-Rod trying to be the center of attention and saying the wrong thing. I wrote that Transformation of A-Rod blog saying I'm actually an A-Rod fan now because he's finally stopped putting his foot in his mouth and just being a genuine person. This would kind of go back on that.
Well, no, because I think this is him just being a genuine person talking about retirement after this Yankee contract and it just making sense. So I think it was probably more of a casual conversation.
Yes,
and this guy just took it. I was like, oh, I heard the word retirement.
Versus saying, I'm hanging it up after 2017. Look at me. Farewell tour.
Exactly.
It wasn't that.
It wasn't A-Rod being A-Rod. It was Alex Rodriguez talking and someone like, oh, A-Rod just said something I can run with.
But what about the fact that Jeter was down in Cuba making headlines, being the center of attention, face of baseball, you know, really transcending cultures?
Here comes the conspiracy
cultures. And A-Rod saying, oh, I got to grab me some of those
look
headlines.
Look at me.
I can't have Jeter stealing all the attention. I mean, Jeter was bigger than Obama down there.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's that. I think it's a coincidence on the timing, and I don't think A-Rod was out there doing this trying to get more attention. I really don't think A-Rod wants the attention at this point. In all honesty, he's just trying to kind of go out the right way. I feel like
just trying to live life and date his new chick.
Date his new chick, yeah.
And Wojcicki,
good child.
You try and pronounce it.
And Woj,
and Wo,
Wojcicki.
Is that how it is?
Well, I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Well, his new billionaire girlfriend, who is the ex-wife of like the Google CEO / medical research company president.
Come on, man. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, I can't believe nobody's talked about this, and I haven't seen any articles written or anything. I figured someone would run with this one. But she runs a medical research company that has to do with like biogenetics. Really, dude? Come on, man.
I smell something fishy.
I mean, it's just weird. Why would you possibly go there? I'm not saying either. I'm not saying, but geez, let's try to avoid those situations.
Hey, if he's trying to clear some tests, there's no better person to go to than Ann Woj.
Well, yeah. the Woj has something up her sleeves. It's possible. There's got to be an explanation for this, because there's not very many other explanations.
A-Rod's, he's in his 40s now. He's realized that, you know, he doesn't need to be chasing this young tail. He just needs to find somebody who matches with him personally and can provide a nice, comfortable life as he enters his retirement years.
Well, as I watch mostly in the morning, I watch CBS News, and just that's how I consume my news for about 45 minutes before I start working. And there was something they actually reported on this last week saying, you know, exactly this. But then there was a new study apparently that millionaires or rich men in their 40s no longer like to date supermodels, but they rather would date the women of intellect. And apparently that's what he's doing. So,
well, what's Jeter doing then?
Jeter's not on that.
Jeter's like, have you seen Hannah Davis?
Yeah. Jeter can do anything he wants.
Yeah. No, I'm. Listen, Ann Woj, I'm sure, was a very fine looking woman when she was 25, probably even 30. But she has passed her prime in the looks department. But I'm happy for A-Rod if he has found happiness. I will say that. And they were out at a Mexican restaurant the other day. They seem to be a very happy couple. And, you know, if
A-Rod, in the one picture that some paparazzi guy got from, like,
A-Rod
across the street.
If he hits the 30 home runs again this year, A-Woj has to get the credit for A-Rod's success.
And if she doesn't, she's getting the foot, getting the boot.
I wonder if she's going to be on road trips and in the box seats at Yankee Stadium and the whole thing. This is the new power couple in Hollywood.
So A-Rod's gonna be serving Ann Woj popcorn.
Yeah,
just feeding it to her.
Yeah, you watch.
All right, let's see. I hope it works, and I hope nothing else comes about this. I really do.
there's no paperwork.
I hope they've been very careful.
Nothing going on with A-Rod Corp behind the scenes.
Yeah, I hope Woj Corp and A-Rod Corp are being very, very careful in what they
listen,
do.
I'm sure she knows a ton about business, and A-Rod clearly wants to get into the business world.
The fly fishing, right.
The fly fishing business world.
Yep. Yep.
Good for A-Rod. All right. Not good for Rob Refsnyder, who has officially been optioned to AAA because he... We talked last week and we were so excited that it finally seems like the organization is behind Refsnyder, and he was playing a solid enough defense where you could justify him being the utility guy. But in that time, he took two ground balls off the face, misplayed some balls, and
he had some throwing errors too.
Kind of
a bad week for him.
Real bad week at the worst possible time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. He kind of shot himself in the foot this past week because he had, I think, two or maybe three errors. And, I mean, the last ball that I saw, the one of them apparently was a bad hop. But the last one I saw, it just ate him up and it hit him in the face. And he just played it. He misplayed the ball, you could tell. And he was backing up on a ball. He probably should have charged and taken, but the hop got too big on him. And it just ate him up. And another play that he had an errant throw. This is a guy I still think – I actually feel – I don't even know how to say this. Maybe I feel like Joe Girardi has more confidence in him at this point than he did last year. And I think that's because of the work ethic that he's put in. And I know Girardi puts a lot of stock in the way that people handle themselves and the way that they work hard. And from everything I've heard, there's nobody working harder at their craft than Rob Refsnyder. He had an unfortunate week. What I think is going to happen is obviously he's going back down to AAA. They're going to put him as a third baseman to get a lot more reps at third base, gameplay, so that, you know, he could come up. Because the guys who are fighting for that last spot now are, what, Peter Cosma and Ronald Torres. And Cosma is a guy who's, what, 32 plus? I don't know. He's in his mid-30s. He's a guy, I think. He's a guy who's been around for a while. If you listen to the broadcast when the Yankees played the Nationals, it was the Nationals broadcast that was the only one available. And they were like, they were talking about Pete Cosma and saying that he has a middle name in Washington, and it's like Aaron Boone's middle name in Boston. They can't stand the guy because he's made so many mistakes, or he just doesn't hit. He doesn't do anything.
Really?
So yeah, I didn't realize that. This is a guy that probably isn't gonna stick around. My only thing about him is that he's very, very similar to Brendan Ryan. So I guess I'm hoping that Torres gets the job. The guy could play all over the place. He's younger. He's, I think, 26 years old. He could play all over. He's hit pretty well in spring training. I think he was, the last time I saw him, he was hitting at a 280 clip. So he's got a little bit more offense than Cosma, obviously. So that might be the guy that we see win the job. But I got to believe that Refsteiner's really hot on his heels.
So
there's no $10 million contract in front of him.
So apparently, Cosma was the guy who broke the hearts of the Nationals in Game 5 of the 2012 NLDS.
Okay.
When he was with the Cardinals. So yeah, Aaron Bleepin' Boone, Pete Bleepin' Cosma.
Oh, that's the reason that it had nothing to do with his play as a National.
Yeah, he played for the Cardinals, not the Nationals.
Right. I thought he was with the Cardinals last year, though. No, I'm wrong? Maybe I'm wrong.
The Cardinals, yeah, not the Nationals.
Okay, I took it completely out of reference, but okay, now I get it.
Right. But so you still feel confident that Refsteiner is going to get work at third base in the minors. That's what Girardi said. Before, we're going to stick him at the majors as our utility guy. We want him to get more experience in gameplay in the minors, which makes sense. But am I foolish for still having hope that he's going to play a valuable role to this team this year?
No, because I think one of the big reasons he didn't last year was because of Steven Drew and the fact that they gave Steven Drew all that money for 1 year. It was a show me year for Steven Drew. He didn't show anything. But you know how the Yankees are. They abide by the contract.
It wasn't that much money. It was $5 million.
It was $10 million. It was a $10 million one-year contract.
No. Are you sure?
No doubt. No doubt. And the fact that they gave him that money was the reason I think Girardi was getting press for keeping him in the lineup and seeing what he could do. And then Girardi just fell in love with this guy. He's a vet guy. I mean, Cosmo's a vet guy too. So that, again, there's a little bit of a scariness there for me. But I think they see the potential in Refsteiner. They know what his bat is. And if there's struggles going on with the offense and they're going to need to bring a bat up, a right-handed bat, they know Refsteiner's there. And I think he's definitely got a much better chance of coming up than he did last year.
I like.
Even though I thought he had a great chance last year too.
Well, last year would have made more sense. So what I got really pissed about last year wasn't necessarily the start or the first half of the season, because they, like you said, they gave Steven Drew that money, which I just looked it up. It was $5 million. He made $10 million the year before in Boston. But good for Steven Drew for making all that cash. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent.
But you enjoyed that, right?
I did. Down the stretch, when clearly Steven Drew was giving them nothing and Refsteiner was hitting a little bit and he seemed to be playing an adequate second base, we saw him make a few plays. That's when I got really mad. We both got really mad. That just stick the kid in there. Give him a little spark. But this year, it's just a utility role that he would be playing. It's not like it would be a starting role. So there is time to give him some more play in the minors. And I mean, there could be a spot that opens up for him this year, and he does make a key impact, which
that's the thing. It's a totally different role this year because we know what we have at second base, and we have a stud at second base now. Third base isn't going anywhere.
I think he's totally done with second base.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. He's now the super utility guy. He is Ben Zobrist. That's where his value is, I think, as a major leaguer right now, too. I mean, maybe he gets an opportunity somewhere else if that's the case at another position down the line, but right now for the New York Yankees, his value is to be a super utility guy.
So when they put him in the minors, you think he's going to be their everyday third baseman or move back and forth?
I don't know enough about their roster, so I would assume that he would get a lot of days at third base.
Yeah, I would say it'd be like 75% at third base.
But I mean, I could see them giving him some work in the outfield too. If he's going to be that guy, eventually he's got experience in the outfield. I could see them putting him there occasionally, but I think when he's in AAA, he's going to see mostly third base, some second base.
Yeah. So another thing that happened today, just before we started recording, is both New York baseball teams are now TBD on who's going to be starting opening day. the whole thing with Harvey and his undisclosed medical issues, and he might not be ready for opening day, that is probably throwing Mets fans into a frenzy. But Brian Hawk also tweeted that Tanaka is not necessarily going to be the Yankees' opening day starter. Girardi said that he still needs to show him something when he pitches against Philly this week. Actually, he's pitching tomorrow, today, when you're listening to this, Tuesday.
Yeah.
So Tanaka has not had a good spring. It's been up and down, very inconsistent. I kind of like that Girardi's lighting a fire under him. Listen, Tanaka, you're our quote-unquote ace, but you're not guaranteed an opening day spot or opening day start. You need to start pitching better, and I actually appreciate that.
So one of the big things is they're talking about extending him his spring too, if that were the case, if he doesn't see what he wants to see. And I think a major concern, the biggest concern for me, is the velocity of the fastball. The velocity of the fastball last outing was, I mean, it wasn't even over, you know, I think the average velocity was under 90 miles an hour. And that's something that's concerning, because that's dramatically different than what he should be throwing. And we know what happened. I mean, the results are extremely apparent. He got lit up. And if he doesn't show that he's got both the velocity, he's able to control the pitches and can, you know, put people away, then something's going on. And the only reason I'm not concerned about him as an injured player right now is because he is going out tomorrow to throw, or today, Tuesday.
Right.
If he was injured, if they had any inkling of him being injured, there's no possible way he'd be throwing right now. So it's very possible that his last outing, that he was working on something else. He wasn't throwing the fastball. He was just doing certain things. And a lot of guys in spring training, when they know what their role is, they take the entire spring to work on things. And so I don't take stock in spring training unless you're a guy fighting for a spot. If you're a guy who has a solid role and you can just work on things, and a lot of those guys do that.
I'm just getting really tired of the whole drama around Tanaka. Nothing's ever easy with this guy. It's always, his velocity's a little bit down. He's got a little bit of soreness. He might not be starting. You know, we're going to evaluate. It's just nothing. He's not an ace. We said this when we were in Tampa. We were joking around about t-shirts. He's not an ace. And I think once Yankee fans accept him for what he is, a number two pitcher who you're going to be a little bit frustrated with because of his health issues, maybe we'll feel a little bit better about it. But I've come to grips with the fact that he's not an ace, and I don't think he's ever going to be an ace.
I mean, year one, the dude was an ace. He had filthy, ridiculous stuff that nobody could touch. And then things happened. So I don't know if he was an ace and now he's not because of what's occurred with his body, or if he just was the same, a similar guy, and Major League Baseball hadn't seen him yet, and that's why he was having a lot more success in that first year, which is extremely possible. But, you know, we're not going to know until we see a full year out of him.
But that's the thing. That's why he's not an ace. It's because not of because of his lack of stuff or his inability to go out there and shut a lineup down, because I think he can do that on any given day. But he can't do it consistently. He's never going to give you 30-plus starts like you'd want out of an ace.
Right.
He's never going to be that guy. He's the next best thing, though. He is a very good pitcher, very talented pitcher. But you've got issues with him. It's like a sports car where you've got to change the oil a lot, and you got to really take care of it. And it's probably going to not start every now and again. It's just the reality of it.
So there's a possibility that we could see Mr. Luis Severino.
Oh, I would be shocked. I tweeted out a poll after the Tanaka news saying if Tanaka can't go on opening day, who do you want the opening day starter to be? Severino by far got the most votes. Pineda was second. Evaldi was third, and then just past Evaldi by 1% was the bullpen. So
there, you don't want to give CeCe the ceremonial start?
No, thanks. I think the Astros will get batting practice before the game. They don't need it during the game as well. But it will be Pineda.
It will be Pineda, if it's not,
which I agree with.
And he's been pitching very well this spring. So
he's also, I mean, he can handle it mentally. I'm sure Severino.
Whoa, be careful with that.
I'm sure Severino. Well, here.
You're talking about Jekyll and Hyde here.
Listen, let me rephrase it. If he goes out there and pitches three innings and gets shelled, he can handle that better mentally than I don't want Severino going through that on opening day. That's a lot of pressure for a kid who's only pitched a handful of starts in the major leagues.
Okay, I believe his makeup is ready for it. I think he's the real deal.
I hope so, but I think you give it to the veteran.
Well, he's going to give it to, yeah, that, but that's what's going to happen. He's going to give it to Pineda, because Pineda right now, I think, is, if you were to, you know, hold a gun to the head of your manager, you would get, and to get a 1 through 5, Pineda's going to be your number two. And we all know that Joe loves his vets and will always side with the vets and always, you know, default to those guys. So you're right.
So if Tanaka needs an extra go-round in the minors, that actually opens up the fifth starter spot for CC and Nova.
I'm pretty sure I called this. This is exactly what I'm saying. This is the six-man rotation. That's not really a six-man rotation, but it is, but it kind of isn't. This is exactly what I want credit for calling this like a month ago, because this is exactly what's going to happen. They're going to skip a start here and there for Tanaka, and they're going to end up with a six-man rotation. They're not going to call it that, but that's exactly what
it's going to be. It's going to be a 5.5-man rotation.
Yeah, they're both going to be stretched out. They're both going to be guys that are going to be throwing, you know, if they're not throwing on every fifth day, these guys are going to get work in enough so that their arms are still stretched out. It's what's going to happen. It's going to be a six-man rotation.
And basically, it's whoever sucks the least will stay in the first rotation. In the first month, whoever is pitching good enough will stay in the rotation, and then the guy who's sucking will go to the bullpen. And I actually am starting to believe that they will put CC in the bullpen if he is getting outpitched by Nova.
I don't know. I mean, the one guy who's outpitched both of them is Brian Mitchell, in all honesty. If we're looking at who's been the most effective starter, it's been Brian Mitchell. The guy's stuff is phenomenal, and he's outpitched both of them. I mean, I think he's got a 1-point-something ERA. The guy's been phenomenal. I didn't realize. I totally forgot that Brian Mitchell was a 98-mile-an-hour guy.
Live arm.
At his peak. I for some reason in my mind, he was pegged at like 95,
but he, 94, 95. His knock has always been control. He has not been able to spot it. I remember a start in Chicago. I think it was before he got hit in the head with the line drive, where he was throwing 97 miles an hour, but he was falling behind everybody 2-0, and he only lasted a couple innings because of it.
Yeah, it sounds like Nathan Eovaldi, but there's a guy. This is a guy who,
Scott, as the president of the Eovaldi fan club, I don't think you're allowed to say that.
Well, it is what it is. I mean, that's what he's been. I'm not saying he's going to be that this year. He's going to be much better, much better. There's a lot of things. Brian Mitchell is a guy that could absolutely slide in as that fifth starter if need be, but he's got two people in front of him that are going to be there. Look, the bottom line is this rotation, we know there's going to be injuries throughout the season, whether it's now or in May or June or August or whenever. We're going to have probably 7 starters that are ready to go at any given point, because that's how many guys, how many guys actually take the ball this year. It's going to be well above 7, but we're going to need at least all of the above mentioned guys need to be ready to start, and we'll probably get starts at one point or another.
If gun to your head, if you had to pick one of them to not miss any starts, who would it be?
You mean to stay healthy the whole season?
Stay healthy the whole year. Out of the 6 guys,
right?
Who would you say will be healthy the entire year and not miss a start?
Eovaldi.
I think I'd actually agree with you.
Yeah, and the only reason I say that is it would be between him and Severino, but I feel like
they're not going to let that happen.
Exactly.
They're not going to let Severino go over 180 innings, I bet.
And that's why.
And I think if they make the playoffs, they'll let him go over that. They're not going to shut him down for the playoffs. But I could see a couple starts over the summer where Severino is just skipped because they don't want him to reach 200 innings.
Right. And Eovaldi's he's a horse. The guy, he's a big dude. He can handle it. I don't know what happened last year with the elbow, but he was ready. He was going to be ready if the Yankees won or if they beat Houston.
Did you hear him on Francesa last week?
Yeah, I did.
Francesa,
That's what he was talking about. He said he was going to be ready out of the bullpen.
Yeah. Francesa asked him if he was happy with his season last year, and I was kind of disappointed in his answer. He said, yeah, I was happy, but I would have liked him to say, no, I wasn't happy. I didn't go past 5 innings every start. I was happy with, I didn't give up runs, and my record was good, which he did say. But, I mean, the dude, we've said this a million times, needs to get past 5 innings.
He knows that. He's commented on that. I mean, if you listen to the rest of the interview, he said that that was one of the biggest things he wants to work on and improve on this year.
He said he did it in Florida, but he didn't, I don't know. I guess I just, I'm being hard on him.
You were listening out of one ear. You heard what you wanted to hear. Let's all be honest. He was talking about the things that he needs to get better on and some of the things that he needs to get better on. And he knows that he wanted to develop, he's been working a lot on the slider and the split finger. And those are two of the big pitches that he knows he needs to command in order to be effective and get guys out more often early in counts. He can't go as deep in counts and he can't go because the pitch count gets too high. He knows that and he needs to get deeper into games. This year is actually teed up for him beautifully because after May 9th or 11th or whenever Chapman comes back, it's a 6-inning game. So honestly, it's a perfect situation for Nathan Eovaldi, in all honesty.
Yeah, 6 innings should be the absolute bare minimum for a guy like Eovaldi and his age.
But that's the thing. He doesn't need to go any more than six.
Right. Like you said, the big three, it makes it a 6-inning game. But the first month of the season and then after the big three, are you concerned with the bullpen?
No, I'm not. I don't think there's any concerns at this point right now as far as the arms that are not injured, okay? Because we don't know what they're going to do. We have no idea what's going to happen. Look at last year. Did we think that David Carpenter was going to be the disaster that he was when the season started? No, it just happened. So the fact that a guy
can't come in... Who's going to be the David Carpenter this year?
Well, nobody, because there isn't that contract. There wasn't a trade for that guy. So I don't think anybody's going to be him unless it's a big one, and that will be a disaster. But I think there's guys that are going to slot in. I think we know who's going to be there. Obviously, the big three are going to be the big two for the first month of the season. Chasen Shreve is going to take that seventh inning role. He's going to play the same role he did last year early in the season and was dominant. And I think that we're going to see guys slot in behind that. You know, there's obviously competition for those last two spots in the bullpen.
Last two spots for the month of April, and then that will create a competition for the last spot once Chapman comes back. Brian Mitchell, who you already mentioned, has got a hell of an arm. He's been having a great spring, but do you think they'll use him as a one-inning guy? He is a starter. Don't you think they'll want to keep him stretched out?
That's the only possibility I would think that they would put him in AAA is if they saw him as a starter this year and they wanted to keep him stretched out. That would be the only reason, because he has earned a job 500%. I mean, he's pitched probably the best of anybody in the, you know, one of the best in the rotation, one of the best on the team. I think he's got some great stuff. He's showed very well this spring.
And, you know, the long inning thing is difficult because how often do you really get to pitch each week? So it's not like, oh, he's the long inning guy. He can be a swing starter. No problem. It didn't work with Adam Warren. We saw he needed to be stretched out in order to pitch out of the rotation. We got mad so many times because Girardi wouldn't use Warren for four games when they really needed him, and then all of a sudden he'd pitch 3 innings. And the reason was because he needed to stay stretched out. He couldn't be pitching 12 pitches, and that's it. Mitchell, they need to make a decision. He's going to be a one-inning guy. He's a right-handed pitcher who can throw hard. He'll fit in nicely into our bullpen. Or he's going to be our first call-up starter if we have any injuries.
And that's a big deal because he's an absolute weapon out of the bullpen. So, you know,
maybe he's never done it.
His arm is a weapon is what I mean. The thing that's going to be completely that we don't know about is that when Chapman's back, all of this could be different. I mean, there's a whole month of baseball before that happens.
A lot can happen in a month.
A lot can happen in a month. So we may be talking. I'm sure we're going to be talking about all of these guys, all of the guys that are up for these last spot and spot two spots, they're going to be up at some point this season contributing to this ball club. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we saw what happened with the Scranton bus last year. We know these guys are going to be up and they're going to be contributing to the team. So the fact that who breaks camp and who doesn't and it's going to be a revolving door. I still think that there's not, you know, enough guys in there that have completely solidified their roles. There are certain guys that are absolutely on this team, but you know, there's some guys that if they don't perform well, they're going to get sent down and another guy's going to get a shot.
Yeah, I do. I asked you the question. You said no concerns. I do have some concerns, especially without Chapman there for the first month. I am afraid it's going to be a little bit of what we saw at the end of last year, where bridging the gap between the starters and the big two is like, you know, it's playing with fire. It could work or it could blow up in your face. So, our old buddy Jesus Montero was placed on waivers by the Mariners and claimed by the Blue Jays. But I think definitively we can say the Yankees won that trade.
Finally, we have an answer.
The Mariners have given up on Jesus Montero.
Released on Easter? Was it Sunday that he was released?
Was it?
I think it was.
Poetic justice.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually surprised. Was he out of options? Was that the reason they had to?
Yeah.
So he was out of options. They were hoping he was going to clear waivers. There's no way he was going to clear waivers. I mean, someone was going to take a shot at this kid.
He's not that old.
He's 26, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that old.
No, I know. Someone's definitely going to take a shot at him, and obviously they did. The Blue Jays picked him up, and he's going to become a Hall of Famer probably.
Right, he's going to find that Toronto power.
Yeah.
The Toronto power that Joey Bats and Encarnacion and all those guys found. Melky, when he went up there.
Yeah, we need to look to see if any of these guys was dating the Google ex-wife chick.
Ann Woj?
Yeah. We need to see what her dating history is and who else is in there.
She's never dated Jesus Montero.
No, but I'm saying she could have dated somebody on the Blue Jays.
Oh.
Yeah.
The plot thickens.
Yes. I'm curious. I want to know her dating. We need to get TMZ on the line.
A small part of me wanted the Yankees to pick him up.
Yeah, but there was no spot for him. Where was he going
to
go?
But I mean, it's just mainly a big FU to the Mariners.
I guess. It's a waste of a waiver spot is what it is. But he's a DH. There's no room for him on this roster. There's no room. Where's he going to play?
Where's he going to play for the Blue Jays? He's not going to make the team.
Yeah, I know. But the Blue Jays were just taking a shot because that's what they do. They know that they got to win now, and they're going to try to find lightning in a bottle because the guy's got talent somewhere in his body, and he just hasn't been able to show it yet. He's the epitome of the quadruple A player.
I rewatched because I tweeted out the link to the video on YouTube of Montero's first two career home runs to the opposite field. Do you remember that against the Blue Jays? Or excuse me, against the Orioles?
I remember the shots, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Everyone was so excited that day.
I hated how he ran. He always bothered me.
It looked like he was running in mud.
But he runs on his toes. He kind of does what A-Rod does. Like, I can't stand the way A-Rod runs either. He runs on his toes, and it's like his heel never hits the ground.
We thought we had a young right-handed power hitter for a brief second there. We thought we found a 30 home run hitter power catcher, and I was just ecstatic.
So are we going to – well, he was never going to be a catcher. I don't think he was going to be – we knew that he wasn't going to be a catcher at the major league level. If not, maybe for a year.
But he could have been for a little while like Mike Napoli type where maybe he catches 40 games a year just because he's got a great bat and you deal with it.
How about we talk about the fact that Brian Cashman got rid of this guy and got a hoss of an arm. And let's give him some credit for potentially seeing what he really was and that he was never going to pan out and he was going to be this bust
guy. You and I have sneaky become Cashman lovers.
Yeah, I think Cashman does a lot of things that don't warrant like major fanfare in the media and with fans, but he does so many subtle moves. I mean, granted, this was not a subtle move. This was a big move. But
blockbuster trade.
Yes, but the subtle move and the fact that he maybe saw the writing on the wall – you know, from all the coaching and you know, what all of his information, and was savvy enough to turn that into a frontline type of pitcher. So, you know, I got to give him, that's a ballsy move too, because Montero was the guy that Phil Hughes was the pitching prospect that we were all waiting for. Montero was the prospect that we were all waiting for. I mean, he was
number three in baseball at the time.
He was the guy. And we had him. He was there since like Gary Sanchez. Like, he was there from 16 years old, I think. And he was in the organization for a long time. So we were waiting for him for a long time. And then just getting rid of him was like, what? Wait, but you know, all of us were like, wait. And now look at it. I mean, he had a run-in with an ice cream man. He probably gained, 60 pounds. Dude can't hit on the major league level over a sustained amount of time. Cashman won that. Cashman did a great job.
Oh, absolutely.
And turned it into...
The only time I get on Cashman is because for every Jesus Montero trade, he's got a Jacoby Ellsbury signing. And I just scratch my head.
Yeah. I still believe, though, that there's pressure on these signings. To make a wave. I mean, there's pressure just automatically being the New York Yankees, so you got to make a splash at some point. And we know that
I'm sticking to that was a pure reactionary move to Cano going to Seattle. I understand the McCann and the Beltran contracts way more than I understand the Ellsbury contract.
Yeah, no, I get it. The Ellsbury contract is one to look at and scratch your head over. But yeah, and I don't know if that's – maybe that was their play that they saw, you know, the – they just weren't going to go above – a certain number of years for Cano.
No, and we're it's playing out that that was the right move.
Yes,
but it was that doesn't mean that signing Ellsbury to 7 years is better than signing Cano to 10 years. I would argue they're equally as dumb.
Okay.
All right, that's our last bit of Yankee stuff. We're going to preview the Red Sox and the Orioles. And then that'll only leave us with the Blue Jays and the Rays next week, which, again, the episode will be out on Monday, which will be opening day. So just a note. So as I was looking through these previews and at the baseball prospectus win projections, I've noticed they've constantly been updating. Because when I was originally looking, the Red Sox, I think, were projected at 85 wins. And now baseball prospectus has them at 87 wins, which ties them with the Blue Jays and the Rays, actually, for first in the division. Why do all of these projections and all these baseball writers... No, not why do they change. Why do they love the Red Sox so much?
Every year,
the Red Sox, last year, they were a World Series favorite just for signing fat Pablo Sandoval.
I don't really get it. I see a bunch of question marks on this roster. I mean, you look at their pitching staff and it's all question marks except for one guy. I don't know. I think that they're falling in love with their outfield. Their outfield's good.
And very good.
The fact that they got Kimbrel is locking down the end. And then they have one pitcher who they know what they're going to get from. And the rest of these guys, there's just such a question mark. So the fact that Pablo Sandoval weighs like 700 pounds right now, he can't even play a full game because he's out of breath.
He's legit. His job is legitimately in question. There's reports in Boston that he might not be the everyday third baseman. He might be a platoon player until he cuts down on his weight and starts playing a little bit better.
Well, that's what happens when you're a fat bastard and you can't get through a 9-inning game because you're out of breath, man.
That would be actually pretty ballsy on the Red Sox, you know, management for saying, yeah, I know we just gave you a mega contract, but you're fat. You can't play.
But Dombrowski didn't give him that contract, right? That was the previous regime.
Dombrowski still answers to John Henry.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they've realized that it was a terrible move, but we'll see what happens with this guy. I hope he stays in the lineup because I don't think he's going to contribute very well.
And then at the other corner,
I think he's going to be more of a fat cancer.
The other corner, Hanley Ramirez, is going to be playing first base, which will
total
be
unknown.
An absolute disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We've seen what he's been. First of all, the guy is just so lackadaisical, and he really is Manny Ramirez reincarnated in this. He even looks like him now. He's gained a lot of weight too. He's a bigger dude, and he kind of looks like Manny. Loose uniform, the
totally
dreads.
Copying Manny.
Yeah. So the fact that they put him at first base, I feel like they can hide him at first. I mean, he was a shortstop coming up, so his glove on the infield, it's got to be decent. You know, his range is definitely not there, so they're thinking they can move him over to first, and he'll make that.
Yeah.
Which I kind of agree with. I think that's the only place in the field that he could play.
I agree, but like you said, you can't underestimate the laziness factor.
He's extremely lazy. And just flighty. He's like a flighty dude. Like, he doesn't pay attention.
So as good as their outfield is going to be, which it's going to be very good, especially defensively.
And fast. Yeah.
Fast. Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Ruzny Castillo are all going to be very good defensively. Their infield will be equally as bad. Or, you know, as much as their outfield is good, their infield will be that bad. Sandoval is going to be terrible. Hanley's going to be terrible. Pedroia's coming off injury. And his body is breaking down totally.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he gets through a season unscathed.
Yeah, and he's always, I always thought he was a good defensive second baseman, but his range has decreased in the last year or two. Bogarts is good, but he's not a gold glove shortstop. So, their infield defense is going to be pretty bad.
And that's going to be a big deal. They need to make outs when there are outs available with this pitching staff. So, yep. The fact that the prognosticators have put them at 87 wins to me is ridiculous and giving them entirely too much credit. And I believe it's going to be under that. I could see them, you know, being closer to the bottom of the AL East, in all honesty.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but...
But, I mean, the thing about this, I'm saying that, but I don't think it's going to be up by a large margin. I don't think any of these teams... I think it's going to be an absolute dogfight between everybody. So I think the AL East is, like, one of those too-close-to-call things because there are so many things that can happen. Like, there's not one team that's obviously better than the other. The Blue Jays' offense is the best, no doubt. It really is. But their pitching staff is absolutely questionable. And you look at the Yankees roster, they have question marks, but we're very strong, I think, throughout. There's question marks everywhere, so I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. The fact that you're going to put an 87-win team or projection on that, and it just keeps going up. Like, why is it going up?
Yeah, that's a good question. The only things we've seen in spring training is the fact that Pablo Sandoval stinks. Like, that's been the big thing out of Red Sox camp. Also, Eduardo Rodriguez is going to start the season on the DL. And Carson Smith, who we praised them for that trade when they made it because that's sort of an under-the-radar bullpen move, He's going to start the season on the DL.
Yeah, and then what about the kid, the Henry Owens kid? Is he going to start in the majors? I haven't seen much about him.
No, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll see what these guys have, but I just hope there's a fight early in the season between the Yankees and the Red Sox. That's what I'm hoping for.
We need some blood.
Yeah, give me some hate.
Well, Ortiz is on his final season, so there's going to be that whole farewell tour mess. And you know, you just know the Yankees are going to be, you know, kissing his ass at the end of the season, which I'm going to dread. A-Rod's going to be out there handing him some sort of plaque or signed something. It's going to be disgusting.
So maybe Chase Headley will knock him out when he's about to round third on a home run.
Hopefully.
After 15 minutes before he gets to third.
But you were saying that, you know, you see the Red Sox sort of finishing towards the bottom half of the division, which is fine. But if I were talking about the five teams in the AL East, the only team I'm ruling out from winning the division is the Orioles. I think all other four teams can win the division. Do you disagree?
I do disagree because I think the Orioles, one, they have a better offense than the Red Sox. And I think their pitching staff is very similar. I mean, granted, they don't have a number one.
It's not. I mean,
it is. The rest of look, you look past David Price and you look at the rest of their guys, and they all look exactly the same as the Orioles. Well, the rest of those guys are the same thing that the Orioles have. So they have one extra dude.
Let's mention that. Buchholz, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Rick Porcello are the big three guys after David Price that are huge question marks to the Red Sox. The probability of all three of them pitching well is slim to none. Buchholz is kind of has an injury history like Masahiro Tanaka, where he's always going to go on the DL.
And he buzzed his hair, so he's got nowhere to keep the suntan lotion.
He's just the weirdest looking guy.
Yeah, there's no suntan lotion like hiding spots anymore.
Rick Porcello is a ground ball pitcher, and we just talked about how crappy their infield defense is going to be. He had a good month of September, but he was basically pitching under no pressure. Eduardo Rodriguez, I think, can actually be pretty good, but he is, he's got a little bit of a knee injury to start the season, so we'll see how he heals from that. Huge question marks. So, but I think those guys have a better probability of pitching better than the likes of Ubaldo Jimenez and Tillman and Yovani Gallardo for the Orioles.
See, I don't know why you would say that because I think all these guys are the same pitcher. They're all number four pitchers. That's what they are. All of these guys. They're all number four pitchers. There's not one that stands above the other. I mean, Tillman's going to be their opening day guy. Gallardo won, 13 games last year, I think? 13 and 11 or something like that with Texas. I mean, he's a guy who's going to throw a lot of innings, but they're all very similar pitchers. You just don't know what you're going to get on a given day. So I see their pitching staff as very similar. Obviously, David Price stands above the rest of these guys, but the rest of their pitching staff, to me, is very similar.
Yeah.
But the Orioles offense is much more established and I think is a better offense.
So I guess we're moving on to Baltimore here.
This could be a fluid conversation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the offense, I agree. Manny Machado, Adam Jones, J.J. Hardy, Chris Davis, and Matt Wieters. I mean, that's a very solid foundation to an offense. But I mean, the Red Sox, I think you could argue, is almost, I mean, pretty much just as good. Bogarts, Mookie Betts, Ortiz, Hanley, even though he can't field, he can hit. Who am I missing there?
Is Ortiz Pedroia? Is Ortiz going to hit again this year? I mean,
every year. I mean, he's clearly on the same. A-Rod probably hooked him up with A-Woj. I mean, he's got the same sort of testing going on. I mean, he's clearly doing something because he's still hitting and he's 39 years old. And
that's why I feel so bad. Today we're recording this on Monday. Nick Swisher got released. $15 million they ate 10 of it. I think $5 million was getting picked up by Cleveland, something like that. But this guy's 35 years old, has fallen off of a cliff. And you know why he's fallen off of a cliff? Because that's what baseball players do when they get to 35, 36 years old. They don't hit like they used to. They just don't, they don't produce. So guys that are hitting at 39, 40, you got to question things that are going on. It's just something's not right. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen naturally. My knee hurts when I'm standing up doing this podcast.
Oh, you're still doing the stand-up desk.
I am doing the stand-up thing. I got to get my, you know, keep my blood
joints nice and loose. So yeah, Ortiz is probably going to hit again.
Okay, so I think the one big difference between these two clubs. So we've established their offense is relatively similar, right? I think their pitching staff is very close. Granted, David Price is the one guy.
Okay, that's
so
every big fifth difference. Day, you saw what
every
Price
fifth day
did
they're
for
heading,
Blue Jays.
Heading heels. Fine. Every fifth day they're a lot better. The one
okay that
the
that could be place, potentially 18 wins.
I mean that's they baseball perspective has them 13 wins ahead of the Orioles. The Red Sox ahead of the Orioles. That's a lot of wins.
I agree.
That's
I don't
a
agree
lot
with
of
13,
wins.
I agree with 10.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but the one thing that the Red Sox are superior, and there's no doubt, is their bullpen. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Red Sox have a much better bullpen. I couldn't even name two people on the Orioles bullpen.
I was
going
to say, could you name more than one? Jeez.
No. So the fact that these guys, I don't know who they're going to, is a big question mark in the Orioles clubhouse. But the Red Sox, by far, with adding Kimbrel, and then, you know, adding or just continuing with
Uihara
and
Carson Smith, if he's healthy,
if he comes back. Then who was their closer last year? He got hurt.
Uihara. Koji Uihara.
Yeah, there's another one.
Another
there's
Japanese
another guy,
pitcher. Yeah.
There's another Japanese guy. Yeah, Tozawa. I don't know I think it's Tozawa. He was their closer before Uihara was.
To tell you the truth, I just threw out a random Japanese name.
Oh, it's terrible. But there is another effective reliever is what I was getting at, that who was hurt. I think he had
I do honestly think I don't agree with the Red Sox being, you know, winning the division, but I think they could win the division. I don't think the Orioles can win the division. So obviously Perspectus agrees they're going to finish last. And that's actually the worst record in the league. So they bumped up
in the American League.
They bumped up the Oakland Athletics to 75 wins, and they have the Orioles at 74 wins.
I don't see the Orioles being the worst team in the league. I just don't see that happening. They should be after the contract that they gave Chris Davis. They deserve it. Don't get me wrong. They absolutely deserve it.
Orioles fans were loving it. We talked to a couple on that video. They were standing behind Chris Adderall Davis.
Yeah, yeah. They were – Orioles fans in general are just irritating to me. They have a false sense of hope and security. They're like Redskins fans. They're all the same people. They just – they every year they think they're going to be good, and they're terrible. I just don't get it. I don't know why they have optimism at all ever.
Buck Showalter instills that on people.
I guess. I'm a Buck fan. I like Buck, so –
yeah, I agree. I like Buck as well. I think he got a raw deal with Steinbrenner in 95. But all right, so we will preview the Rays and the Blue Jays next week. As I mentioned, that's our opening day episode. I'm getting very excited. Scott, we are, as people are listening to this, less than 6 days away from, as you called it, actual baseball players
throwing baseballs to each other,
catching baseballs and hitting baseballs on TV, but this time it counts.
And it may not be warm. It may not be warm. We don't know what the weather is going to be. But look, there's baseball, real baseball that we can actually talk about and critique in a real way because it actually counts. Like you were saying, is happening 1 week. And don't forget that we're changing the show back to what we did last year during the season. We will release all shows at 11 a.m. on Monday mornings from after you're listening to this episode. through the season. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I can't wait for opening day, and I'm pumped up.
Me too. Me too. And submit to the mailbag, bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Call the voicemail, 646-480-0342. I'm hoping that as games start, people will be submitting more mailbags. If you're watching a game and Girardi makes a move out of the bullpen that you disagree with, submit it to the mailbag. We want to hear all that stuff. We want to discuss it. You know, I think as we've now been doing this show for a year and sort of gotten the flow down, I think adding in some more fan mailbags during the season, talking about specific in-game stuff, I think will be really cool. So until then, enjoy the week, and can't wait for opening day. Talk to you guys next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.